What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Smoking Tire Podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Innova. Have you ever wondered what the check engine light is trying to tell you? Some people ignore it. They try to cover it up, unplug it, or dismiss it as an unsolved mystery. But with Innova, you can easily identify both the problem and what it takes to fix it. It's like having a personal mechanic in your pocket. I love Innova because it takes all the headache and guesswork out of trying to take care of a vehicle. If you're someone or know someone like me, Innova's for you, and here's why. Because identifying the problem is easy. You just connect your Innova OBD2 diagnostic tool using features like hotkeys and the patented all-in-one display, scan your vehicle's onboard computers to detect for any malfunctions. Then you can verify by pairing your tool with Innova's all-new Repair Solutions 2 mobile app. You'll now have free access to over 60 million fixed solutions that are verified for accuracy by real ASE certified technicians. But if you want both of these great products in one, we highly recommend looking into the 7111 OBD2 diagnostic tablet. It has a premium version of the Repair Solutions 2 app built in and has received the Motor Top 20 award. It doesn't stop there. Repair Solutions 2 is the complete solution. In the app, you'll find troubleshooting information and even be able to order the right parts for the job. And if you still have questions, Innova's USA-based customer support team is always available to help from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Pacific, 6 days a week. Innova tools speak your car's language, so you don't have to. So you can buy Innova tools at all major automotive retailers, Amazon, and of course at Innova.com, Innova.com. So you can find the problem and fix the problem. These are really nice quality products. We have them here at Westside Collector Car Storage. They're great. Innova, Innova.com. Now, speaking of taking care of things at your car, you know what watches your car when you're not watching your car? The Blackview DR750X dash cam. I love these Blackview dash cams because they give me the peace of mind that my car, day or night, is always protected. This dual channel Blackview dash cam comes with both front and rear cameras, so you can enjoy clear image quality day and night thanks to the full HD Sony Starvis image sensors at a wide 139-degree view angle. Blackview's newest LTE dash cam is what you really need if you're considering a cloud-connected dash cam. The newest addition to the Blackview dash cam lineup is connected by design with a built-in nano SIM card reader. This dash cam comes with a free Blackview app, allowing you to connect your dash cam directly or over the cloud, get impact notifications, download videos to your mobile device, watch live view, and more. But that's not all. Blackview's new mobile hotspot function lets you turn your LTE dash cam into a Wi-Fi hotspot for up to 5 devices on the go, meaning you could be on a road trip with 4 of your friends and each of you could be connecting to the Wi-Fi hotspot on this Blackview dash cam, so you're not using your data when you're out driving and just browsing stuff on the road. Of course, you wouldn't do those at the same time, right? You'd have to be a passenger and browsing stuff on the road. Pair your cloud connected dash cam with a parking mode accessory for peace of mind when you're away from your car. And Blackview automatically switches to parking mode to monitor your parked vehicle. Thanks to the video buffer, the few seconds leading to a triggering event, like an impact, are also recorded. When paired with Blackview Cloud, parking mode lets your dash cam save event videos in the cloud in real time just as they happen. So even if someone were to break into your car and steal the dash cam itself, that would be saved in the cloud, so you could still get that video. So go to blackview.com/TST. That's Blackview, blackview.com/TST, and use the promo code TIRE to get 10% off any Blackview dash cam and free shipping for orders over $200. Now, these cameras are over $200, so that pretty much means free shipping for whatever you buy. Blackview.com/TST, promo code TIRE, gets you 10% off any Blackview dash cam and free shipping for orders over $200. Lastly, of course, my favorite underwear. Take a second to thank our sponsor for today's show, Sheath Underwear. Sheath makes the most comfortable boxer briefs I've ever worn. If you're sick of boxers that are too loose, briefs that are too tight, Sheath is for you. I'm actually wearing Sheath underwear right now. I switched to Sheath when they sponsored our video show for the last couple years. They sent me underwear, and then you know what happens? I hit up Sheath and I bought more. That's how much I liked them. I actually, they don't pay me. I paid them. Well, they paid me to say that I'm reading this right now, but I pay them because I've bought more of their underwear. Every time you hear from me, I'm wearing Sheath underwear. It's the best. You got to get a pair. You get one pair, it's going to change your life. The most comfortable boxer briefs you will ever put on your body. Their stretchy fabric is made out of a moisture wicking technology, so they're super soft. They keep everything cool, keep everything comfortable, and keep everything in place. They're particularly useful for staying cool during the summer and while working out. The most unique thing about Sheath underwear is they've got these dual pouches that keep your man parts separated, keeps things from sticking together, keeps things right where they need to be. I was a little skeptical about the dual pouch thing, but let me tell you, it's a game changer. But if you're not into that idea, you don't have to use them. They're just kind of there, and you can wear them like a regular pair of underwear. These will be the most comfortable pair of boxer briefs you've ever worn in your whole life. Plus, they have brand new materials like bamboo and mesh for even more cooling comfort. If you've heard me talk about bamboo on the show, I am all about the bamboo status. I got bamboo sheets, I got bamboo shirts, and I got bamboo boxers. So go to sheathunderwear.com to get the most comfortable underwear you'll ever wear. And here's what the discount is. Code TIRE20. Code TIRE20 at sheathunderwear.com will get you 20% off your whole order at sheathunderwear.com. Promo code TIRE20. The best underwear you will ever wear. I swear it. Of course, if you're tired of listening to me read these ads, and I understand, some people out there might be. They might not be into listening to advertising on our program. There is a way out. There is a side door. There is an exit plan. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/thesmokingtire. Become a patron. You can comment and watch our live streams. You can get the show immediately after it's recorded rather than waiting until Tuesday or Thursday. And of course, you have an ad-free listening experience available, whether you get the show on video or audio. That's available at patreon.com/thesmokingtirepodcast. All right, folks, on this episode of the Smoking Tire Podcast, we've got the entire Forsberg Racing team. Chris Forsberg is here, Alex Jaeger is here, and Brian Heitkotter is here. Chris races Formula Drift Pro. Alex is in the Pro Spec, the one series down from that, and Brian Heitkotter is racing in World Challenge, Pikes Peak, and the more grip-focused events, all in Nissans, and even their team manager, Brandon, is here talking about how to get involved on the business side of motorsports. So it's Team Forsberg on this episode of the Smoking Tire Podcast. Party time in the studio.
All right.
For those joining us on video, this is the most people we've ever had in here, I think. I think we got Forsberg, we got Alex, we got Brian, and we got Brandon.
Mm-hmm.
Shazam! So everyone has to, for the audio feed, you have to like identify yourself before speaking.
Like NPR, like, this is the sound of my voice.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, go for Chris.
Yeah. It's the entire Forsberg Racing team.
Yeah, this is it.
Was it fucking a year ago that you were here?
It doesn't feel like it, but it was.
It does not seem like a year ago, but like it was like 2 months ago. Irwindale last year, right?
I think it was, yeah. I mean, Irwindale was later. It was like November-ish, but yeah, I mean, well, yeah.
Time fucking flies.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah. And now you have like a whole crew.
I know. Well,
so who are all these people?
So, yeah, we, you know, through the off season last year, Brandon and I were talking about trying to expand the team and, you know, not only, you know, working with Alex on the prospect side, bringing up an up and comer to, you know, through the ranks into Pro One with us on the drift side, but also Brian Heitkotter, who is an established road racer and coming from, you know, his first real presence was on the Nissan GT Academy.
Yeah.
And virtual. I got to experience that. I was a judge one of the later years, not the year that he went out and won, the very first one. And, you know, from there progressing into different levels of racing for Nissan North America. And so we wanted to do a road race program with the expansion of Grid Life doing their GLTC. We had those guys just knocking on our door being like, you guys got to build a GLTC car and come out and race with us. And
what's so, GLTC?
Grid Life Touring Cup.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like a open platform, you know, power to weight to tire class. Mm-hmm. And so we built a 370Z, of course, and we reached out to Brian to be the pilot.
So Brian, did you, before you were doing GT Academy, which started virtual and then moved to real cars, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Once you won enough online races, you then got to go race real cars, right?
Yeah.
What was your experience in real cars before doing that?
I'd done a bunch of autocross,
okay,
like in my own street car.
Okay.
A few, like two or three HPDEs a year.
Okay.
Stuff like that.
All right. So you didn't have like, it wasn't a virtual only experience. You knew what going fast in a car was supposed to be. In theory.
Roughly. But I had no like wheel to wheel racing experience. I've never driven a proper race car, slicks, anything like that, you know.
Did virtual racing prepare you in any real way for that?
It did. I think the biggest thing, well, two things. Number one, the muscle memory. Like once force feedback steering wheels were common, you develop that muscle memory for feeling understeer and oversteer and how to react to it and stuff like that. And the other thing was just the competition mindset,
mm-hmm,
and like staying focused for an hour, 2 hours at a time and not making any mistakes.
Hmm.
Like the competition part of sim racing at the top level is just as intense as top level road racing. It's just the cars aren't real.
Yeah, well,
but, you know, your mindset's kind of the same.
I guess if you, I don't know, man, when I drive in sim races, like I don't have the fear. At all.
Yeah.
If I drive a wheel-to-wheel race, I'm like acutely aware of what happened.
There is that difference.
We are going fast.
This car's a lot faster when there's another one fucking right here. Shit. So I guess if you're seeing it in the same, then you don't have the fear.
There's a healthy respect for what can happen. But for me, like playing on a sim when I was growing up was my way of playing race car driver. That's all I ever wanted to do. And that was the only way that I could do it. So I treated it in the sim like real life. So I'd try not to crash, try not to put wheels off, try not to touch other cars, stuff like that.
Did you treat it very seriously from the jump? Like, were you as a kid ever like, I'm just going to try to drift through these telephone poles, like in Grand Theft Auto, fun like a moron? Okay, that's why I'm not a race car driver.
Yeah. Oh, I figured it out.
So you approached it very seriously and professionally from the get-go.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when games started becoming, like, when simulators started coming out, because I grew up in the 80s, right? So it was all just video games at first when I was a little kid. And as I became a teenager and an adult, it started to become, you know, steering wheel and pedals. Games started to get more realistic. They call them simulators now. So as that kind of progressed, I gravitated that direction and just went pure simulator from then on.
What about you? What's your, other than working in Monticello, which is an awesome place to be, did you grow up in that area?
Yeah, I'm from northern New Jersey.
Oh, nice.
About 50 minutes from Monticello Motor Club.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah. Seven Lakes Drive is a good place to learn how to drive over there.
Yeah, I grew up driving like in Hawk's Nest.
Uh-huh.
I like High Point Mountain almost more than Hawk's Nest.
Uh-huh.
It's a lot longer, you know, get a little bit higher speeds. Probably shouldn't say that, but you know, you can get
allegedly
pretty fast. It's just a cool place to grow up. We have some dirt roads and all that too. I come from like a rally background. So,
oh, okay, cool.
It was a lot of fun in that particular area because you could go from the city to Monticello pretty fast. That's why we have so many members up there too. From like,
it's like
the
Monticello
area.
Is a good place to be.
Yeah, it's as you know, you've been on that track. I think it's probably my favorite racetrack I've been on. It's big, it's clean. You know, every time you go to that place, it's immaculate.
Yeah.
Every corner of it is spotless.
Like, yeah, yeah.
I would show up 5 days, sometimes 7 days a week for work. And I'd be like, who's cleaning this place? Like, every day, it looks beautiful.
Yeah,
I'm like, who's the one cleaning it? Who's doing all this work?
That's where all those dudes go. Yeah. They're out there with headlights in the middle of the night.
Yeah, mowing the grass.
Sweeping the tracks and mowing the grass, yeah.
That's what
it is. It's like it's very like VIR-like, mm-hmm. I think. I was there. I was there literally from when it was dirt. I drove it on an ATV in 2005 when it was dirt. And watching it get built up to where it's at now. And now they've got a fucking rally stage there with Chris Duplessis running the show.
Chris
is the G.
He is
that dude.
One of the best people I know.
Yeah.
He's really the reason why I started working there, obviously from rally.
Did you start working on the rally side there? Because you were talking about doing BMW and they've got an outpost there.
Yes.
So you just jump around or what?
So yeah, I helped them develop the whole rally school. That's how actually I became close with Zach. He actually came and did the rally school with, you know, all the Tangent Vector guys. But I originally was brought there just to be an instructor,
mm-hmm.
and I come from a drifting rally background, which at that time the club didn't have any sort of drifting or rally stuff going on, with the except of Chris like going and burning down tires every single day in an M5 safety car. So I came up, helped them develop the rally program. We did their skid pad. I was mostly the guy that handled a lot of drifting stuff. I was like literally the
only dude.
Do
they have a drifting program now?
They have a skid pad. They built like, I don't even know, it's massive. They built a huge skid pad like
not
every other
one, not the one in the back by where the garages are. They built another one, right?
Yeah, no, so they actually got rid of the one where the garages were, and they built more garages now. So,
oh, okay.
Obviously the members are growing. It's got like 600 plus members now. So they built a massive skid pad that has water, it has everything. It's in where the skid pad is. Would be on that picture.
On the the top left is where the garages were. That's the one I remember.
You see them use you know the gallery.
Yeah,
see
yeah.
The big patch of grass above the gallery.
Oh, that's they put it there.
Yeah, now that's a big skid pad.
Oh shit! And then, that is a nice piece of otherwise unused but grass.
Yeah, it was like a helicopter landing spot. That's where everyone would go and show up to the club in my helicopter.
It's fucking G. I've been at press launches there and have someone roll in and they're. Bell Jet Ranger or whatever, and it's pretty sick. Yeah,
yeah. There are some really, really interesting members that go there, but it's cool when you see a helicopter show up and they get in their McLaren 720S. And these guys, I've never met a group of people that are all so happy. Everyone is so friendly. That's a member there. They're all like, they get along. They all eat lunch together. It's like literally like a huge family. Everyone knows what's going on in each other's lives. Everyone, like all their kids, go up there. They go and do the karting. They do all this kind of stuff. It's such a unique atmosphere, in my opinion. I don't really spend a lot of time in places like Monticello other than there. So it's pretty cool to see.
Well, that kind of stuff happens at like a golf club too. I mean, I'm not really of the golf club mentality, although I like the sport of golf.
Right.
But I feel like the racetrack people are like even more mellow because like with golf, it's like you get the relaxation part, but you don't get that like adrenaline thing that you get with driving real fast, and you get that at the racetrack, and also like car people, unlike other people, like car people can talk about cars all fucking day.
Oh yeah,
all day. Like when I take my dad to these events, and my dad's like, we go do other stuff. It's like we talk about golf while we're playing golf, and then we go to dinner and we talk about something else. But the car people, it's just cars like all day, every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a good, probably a good place to work, I bet. It'd be fun.
It's pretty cool. I haven't gotten to spend much time there this year, thanks to Formula Drift, and I have another full-time job. At one point, I worked there full-time, and it was awesome. It was the coolest year of my life, honestly. I wish I could spend more time. It's just hard, especially when COVID hit. We didn't even know what was going on. They closed down for a while, and a lot of us had to figure out, like, hey, how are we going to survive?
Yeah.
So I had to get into more of a normal job again. But it's a beautiful place. It's so cool. If you ever get to spend, I know he didn't get to spend a whole lot of time there, but anytime you get a chance, you capitalize on that.
I've been up there a bunch. They're nice enough to give me not a membership, but like if you don't ask us too often, we'll let you come use the track whenever you want, which is really nice. Yeah.
If you know the right people, you could definitely have some fun. I've driven my drift cars there.
Really?
And so I bring them up and
they don't get mad you're ruining the tarmac?
No. Chris is doing putting down way more rubber.
They should have a drift program. I'd love to see these old white guys learning to drift in really way too expensive cars. That would be hysterical.
Yeah. I've sat down with Ari. I'm sure you know who Ari is.
Yeah, Ari Strauss,
CEO of Monticello, and he wanted to, funny enough, kind of get into building a four-seater drift car type demo thing for like Chris or myself. I mean, really Chris to drive because he gets to do whatever he wants there. But they wanted to build something four-seater drift car to do ride-alongs. Chris Duplessis. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. no, he could do whatever he wants up there. You probably could too. You probably do whatever you want.
I might get one of those one invite a year deals too.
It's actually when you're in town, call him out on it for sure.
Yeah, it's a really fun drifting track. So when we would do corporate events, we would give hot laps at the end of the day, and that's when I really learned how good an F80 M3 can drift.
Yeah,
those cars in stock form. I'm sure you've said this too. It is one of the most impressive stock drifting vehicles. I've only drifted an M3 in DCT, not in manual.
Oh, the sticks are good too.
Yeah. It's cool in the DCT because you could just be clicking gears off. Like I'd be in the carousel at Monticello, just like I'll start in third, I'll grab fourth, I'll grab fifth, and now you're like 125 on our wheel speed. The car's only going like 40 miles an hour, melting the tires off. But they're really good. So at the end of every day at the corporate events, we would just give ride-alongs drifting. And I was like, wow, this track is proper, but you have to really want it to drift there.
Do you ever notice that every modification you do to an F80 M3 makes it worse? It does, right?
Especially in the exhaust department.
Yeah, yeah. I've driven stock ones, and I've driven a bunch of modified ones, and all the modified ones were awful.
Yeah.
They were all just worse, because they just made that turbo surge come on harder and less predictably.
Right,
just leave the fucking thing alone.
I agree. It is an incredible car in stock form.
Yeah.
And even the M2 comp, in my opinion, is very good too.
Oh, yeah.
I've driven
more CS yet?
Ones. No,
CS
I haven't is, driven CS. CS.
It's like $95,000. It's way too much money, but it's great. yeah, it's very good.
Yeah, yeah they slide pretty background. Well. They're a little shorter wheelbase, but I've driven manual ones there too and got to drift them, and that was a lot of fun. It's just a little twitchier, in my opinion, for the shorter wheelbase and whatnot, yeah. But it's a heavy car.
The M3 sedan is like the perfect wheelbase yeah. for it. It's good. Yeah, but you guys are drifting 3Zs. Those are little.
It is. Mm-hmm. It's surprisingly short. I didn't realize that until I wasn't a huge Z guy really my entire life. I've always liked Nissans, and then
Zach, edit that part.
No, I mean like, I was into them, but I never like had one. I should say mm-hmm. I never drove a Z. So I was surprised to find out when we were starting this 370Z venture that it's the same wheelbase essentially as an S13.
Is it?
X.
I didn't realize that.
What, a quarter of an inch longer? So it's
a 100-inch wheelbase on the 370?
Yeah.
Well, I guess they really push the wheels out to the corners.
The bumpers are really short. There's no overhang. Yeah. So, like, this weekend at Irwindale, we're basically rubbing the tire on the wall the whole time.
That's fun.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah.
And are you up to a 400Z now? Do you have a...
We don't have it yet, but we've had two of the pre-productions through the shop now. We had the Proto last year, and then we had the blue one that was out at the New York show, or release, I should say, since the auto show got canceled. We had that one come through the shop, too, so we got to, kind of peek around at it, but it's still not ours. That was Nissan's, and we're waiting for ours to show up, hopefully, in the next month or two, and we are supposed to have that ready.
Are there production delays on that car, or is it...
Because they haven't pushed back the production car release date yet, but just us getting our chassis has just kind of been pushed back. And so we thought we were going to be working on it now and bringing it out to SEMA.
Yeah.
But we're not going to get it till maybe December, and we got to have it ready for Long Beach.
Does that mean, we've kind of forgot about that one when someone asked us at on the show the other day, like, what do we think are going to be the biggest, the cars that we see a shitload of at SEMA this year. Forgot about the 400Z.
Well, it's not going to be there. Yeah. There's going to be the one cars. Nissan. Yeah.
We thought it's going to be C8 Corvettes, 86s, new M3s, and what else was there?
More Safari stuff.
More Safari stuff, and then a bunch of electric cars on rims.
I believe that. Right? I believe that.
Probably right. Like mad Mach-E's on rims. Lucid Airs on rims.
Fill that South Pole up.
Yeah. Have you tried to drift a Mach-E yet?
Not yet. I haven't driven one yet.
The rear wheel drive ones, you can slide.
I bet.
Yeah. They're cool.
Especially, big power, big car, electric.
Yeah.
No problem.
Electric drifting is interesting.
Yeah.
Without a way to connect what you're doing to a gear and an RPM, it's a little odd.
Yeah. It's I got to drive a Lotus with a Tesla drivetrain, so it was pretty tail happy.
So a Tesla.
Yeah, essentially.
The Tesla Roadster, basically. Yeah,
exactly. But it was a buddy of ours, Sasha, who's from Canada. He built his own a few years ago.
Oh, I met that guy. Yeah. I've met him before.
He's a cool dude. Yeah. He's quiet, but he builds
Evora,
really cool cars.
Right? It's a Lotus Evora with a Tesla power.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so that thing was fun. I got to rip that thing around Gingerman, and it gets tail happy real quick, because it's got good torque.
But do you even as a pro, when it starts to get sideways, do you have the feel to modulate throttle and stuff like you would in a gas car?
Without the audio? You still feel the rotation of the car. That's the number one thing. But it's very interesting. He was still dealing with battery issues, or maybe it was because it was the end of the day, it was kind of losing its overall charge. So you'd only get one good lap out of it before it started to lose power. Probably just because you're just chasing the charge throughout the day between sessions, but it was still a great time.
When they get really heated up,
I believe that
they don't really work so great.
But yeah, it was a cool build. It's he has a whole company now that's building parts for the Teslas. Called Mountain something Motorsports, but
what the fuck are they called?
He's doing a good job, making some performance parts for those cars.
I met them at one of the Buttonwillow Time Attack things. Mountain is in there. What's it called?
Is it Mountain Pass Performance?
Yeah, Mountain Pass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There it is.
Mountain Pass Performance. Very good. Thank you, Brian.
Yeah, cool guy. He also built the most powerful naturally aspirated VQ out there.
How much power is that?
Like 600 horsepower.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa. Naturally aspirated?
Yeah.
What the fuck do you do to a V? It's got to be stroked out to 4.5 liters or something.
Yeah, that's how I first met him, because he was the other guy pushing the limits on Zs, but in the NA VQ form. So, like, you know, just full ITBs, like long tube headers, like fully built internals. He was working with the guys down at Jim Wolf Technology that I was working with too. So we're doing like similar head packages on our drift car and his road race car. I mean, yeah, they're just making big power naturally.
What's the most effective way, like at a consumer level, to build, to make good reliable power on a VQ?
Turbo kit for sure.
Yeah?
Yeah. You just got to keep the boost down.
Yeah.
Like those things will make, well, depending on the VQ, you know, there's the DE, there's the HR, and then the VHR. On the HRs and the VHRs, you can get, you know, like 500 wheel out of those things reliably forever. No problem.
Like 8, 10 PSI kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah. And then like you get into like 600 wheel and that's like where, you know, you lean on too hard, you might hurt it.
Uh-huh.
But that's like kind of the limit. Like 650 is where you'll start melting them down in stock form.
I met a dude who I drove his 370Z that had was making like 480 at the tire on, on 91, and he said it was totally perfect.
If it's tuned proper,
quick. It was not.
If it's tuned proper, it'll run that forever.
Yeah. And Naoki at Drift 101 has a HKS centrifugal blower on an old 350 that he uses as a drift school car at Willow Springs, and he's never broken it.
Impressive.
That's a good. That's a fucking good testimonial.
Yeah.
Give this thing to randoms at 120 degrees Willow Springs and not break it. Like super low speed first gear drifting.
My,
like
my first VQ, the 350 that I got in 03, I put a Pro Charger on it.
Yeah.
And that thing made it through two events.
Oh, really?
It was only 360 wheel. It just was not. Yeah, I like melted that motor down quick.
Yeah. So what is the current drift car running?
What's that?
What's the current drift
as far as the engine? It's the VR38, so GTR motor.
Oh, it's a GTR motor. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
So, and we're doing almost 1,200 to the ground. It's like 11 and change.
Yeah, so you're not even getting started in that motor. My motor's got lots beyond that.
It's built by T1 Race, and it's capable of like 1,700 wheel, which is like 2,000 horsepower. But we run it at like, 11, like, because we basically dyno it. It makes like 1080, you know, 1100, something like that. And then, like, but that's at about 26 pounds. And so at the track, we'll range from like 24 to like 28 pounds, depending on it's like a little tight on the bank. So I just kind of like push it up a little bit more. So, like, that's where the number just starts to vary. Like,
it just
starts to climb, and we don't even know what it's making, but it's capable of so much more. We're never worried about it.
Yeah. That fucking rules.
It's cool.
That motor is, I mean, GTRs are. Dull as rocks, but
control.
That motor is really effective.
It is like
it's an incredible power plant. Really,
it is right. It's too bad they still sell in the GTR.
Yeah,
no, I don't. They're enormous on the outside and tiny on the inside.
Very small inside.
And what is the point of that?
I
don't know. That seems like a waste of space.
It's a very large automobile.
It is. It's huge. It's huge. And then you sit in, you're like, where the fuck? Why did it get so small in here? I don't understand.
But it's a super reliable motor, like, you know, in ultra power form, of course. And then, like, in Alex's car, he runs a bone stock engine with one of my old turbo kits on it.
Oh.
And that thing's like, what did you say, like 670 wheel? And he's just been beating it all year.
A stock GTR engine.
Yeah, as far as the engine.
With one of your, so you don't even, you take off the stock, the Nissan turbo kit, and put on one of yours.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so,
what's the difference?
Well, it's just like larger manifolds. It's a pair of Garrett G25s hanging off the front and like a Bell intercooler core. So it was a setup that we ran on our car for 2 years, and then we upgraded. Well, we just made another. We have a jig for the manifolds. Made another set of manifolds. We're now running the G30 turbos on ours to make the extra power. And
there's a formula for Pro Spec that it's built to?
As far as the formula is just the tire size versus the weight. It's a little more offset than ours. They have a fixed tire size of 255, 35 GT radial.
Oh, little cute tires.
Wow. Wow. They're best out there.
Sweet tires.
Small tire car. Yeah. His car, he had one of the fastest cars in FD last year on a 275.
Really?
Yeah.
It's only 20 millimeters bigger than my tire. And he's
you can run any tire you want, right? Is that FD?
Well, it's still weight to the tire size.
Oh, okay.
So we're like the same weight, but we're on a 295.
Oh, okay.
So, big meat.
Yeah, he's like out there drag racing it with those big meaty tires. And if you saw his tire next to my tire, like, it's adorable. Because I have a stack of them in my shop at home, and I like put them next to mine. I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
Like, this is not fair.
Brian, what's on your car?
The race car?
Yeah.
Sometimes you run the 295, sometimes you run a 275.
Okay. All right.
GT Radial developed that. GT Radial developed that tire specifically for drift, and we've been applying it to road racing and doing a lot of other stuff with it. It's been great.
Mm-hmm.
What makes a specific drift tire?
The compound, the sidewall composition, like making sure it's soft so it gets good side grip. But yeah, that tire
soft
is
soft compound, hard sidewall.
No. Soft and soft. Yeah,
soft and soft. Okay. Yeah.
And so, it actually makes for a lot of side grip, and then the soft compound gives a lot of forward traction. It's the only tire in FD specifically that's made in the USA too. They have a plant in South Carolina. Yeah. And so they
thought about that before.
Yeah, it's really cool. So it says right on the side, made in USA.
They counter-stripe the lettering so you can fucking really read it.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And it's a great tire. Our car is on the cover of Tire Review Magazine this year. They did a whole article on the new GT Radial.
Tire Review Magazine?
Yeah. This is the type of thing you'd find in the South Hall.
Literally never. Yeah. They got a booth number 1224.7.
Yeah.
Tire Review Magazine.
Yeah, and so,
we just
saw that yesterday. I was like, oh, there's a magazine on this.
I just want to see what the cover of Tire Review looks like.
Yeah. And
wow.
It's
a real thing.
Yeah. Oh, it certainly is.
People ask us about, like, what the best track day tire is. And, like, we don't fucking know, because when we go to a track, we're driving, like, a press car or something. We don't get to try, like, 10 different tires on the one car. It's like, here's one car, here's another car, and they all have different tires. You'd have no idea.
Yeah, there's a lot of different guys on, like, YouTube that'll do, like, just, like, back-to-back-to-back comparisons, And, like, so you get some good results with that. But, for drifting, there's only really four tires that are allowed in. And GT Radial, they have the newest and, in my opinion, the best tire out there now, because they took a lot of effort into designing that tire specifically for drift. So that size, the 295/40, was that specific tire was built, designed, and manufactured in the U.S. for drifting. And so
how many runs
does
one of those last?
Well, it depends.
In your car?
Oh, two laps. It has to make two laps, but in qualifying, we could burn it down in one.
Wow.
So in tandem, we have to, like, be easy on the warm-up. We have to, like, shut down, like, just after the finish, make sure we get the, as much tread as possible for both laps, because in formal drift, you have to do your lead and follow one set of tires. But, like, in qualifying,
that's probably
give it a couple
good.
Extra beans, it'll burn it off, yeah.
I mean, it's probably good, because as an audience member, I don't want to sit there in between the runs while you're changing tires.
Yeah, that started to happen in, like, 2011 or so. Like, they were changing tires after every pass, and we're just like, this
welcome to day seven of
MTV. Yeah. Like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, how to make a fast sport slow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, and just, like, another testament to that engine. When Brian was racing in the Nissan GT3 GTR, so that's a VR38 as well. And that thing, it's kind of restricted. It was making, like 550, but, like, it would just matted for hours and hours and hours, like, endurance-style racing. So, like, that motor in all different formats just can take it.
It's good to know.
Yeah, it's really cool.
So find, like, the 350Z is the new 240
GTR.
Yeah.
You can find them for not a crazy amount of money, too. Like,
really?
I actually got my VR38 from, it was like a guy's show car. He had a 2017 wide body, like, Liberty Walk GTR, and he's putting a 4.1 liter stroker in it.
Uh-huh.
So I bought my long block for $7,000. Which
that's
I don't think
not bad for one of those.
It's not bad. And it only had 40,000 miles on it.
I mean, that's not so bad.
My motor this time last year was driving a GTR to car shows.
How
and now
interesting.
It's sitting in a race car competing in Formula Drift.
It's physically like the same. Does it bolt right into the
Z? It doesn't bolt right in, now.
Yeah, it's a pain. It's not a pain because it's structurally the top three quarters of it are almost exactly the same. Some people come up to me and ask me if my car is a VQ still. But the problem is the all-wheel drive unit runs through the oil pan.
Oh.
So it has this massive oil pan that underhangs under it. So what we did on both of our cars is we have a dry sump setup.
Sump.
So I have a daily dry sump setup. We actually cut 4.5 inches off the bottom of the motor. That's how much it actually gets cut off, and then it just has the plate right below the.
Well, you just replace the entire oil pan with your dry sump billet plate
about this thick.
Yeah. You guys make that?
No. Okay. Daily Engineering. They're on Temecula. They make them in-house.
Cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
Is that a pretty easy thing to put in?
After you cut the front cover,
the entire interior.
Yeah, it's
probably
typically
helps,
pretty
yeah.
easy,
yeah.
but that engine specifically, the front cover does go all the way down the front face of the oil pan, where most of them don't. It has like that nice flat flange, and you just bolt the pan up to the bottom.
Yeah.
So on the VR38, you do have to like machine the front cover like perfectly flat, or it'll leak. So it's a little bit of a pain, but we get away with it.
But doable.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then once that happens, The turbos don't really fit in the factory location either, hence why we moved.
Is that why you put them in the front?
Yeah.
Yeah, plus we get to choose our turbo and be able to change it much faster.
Do they stay a little cooler in the front too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we had them down in the pocket before when we had the VQ set up. And yeah, if you have a turbo issue, like it's like an hour to change that thing versus like what we had a turbo issue and in Gingerman. We swapped that thing in like less than 7 minutes.
Really? That's all that rules.
Yeah.
Went back out in the same session?
I was driving out in our Infiniti demo car. Yeah. We have radio communication.
Oh, it's our now?
Chris's. You know what I mean? So on the radio, he's like, hey.
Soon it will be mine.
He's like, I think my turbo sees. And I'm like, what? Okay. So he pulls off and then like pulls back on track a couple minutes later. I'm like, you good, bro? He's like, yeah, we just changed the turbo.
Wow, I'm amazed it even had time to cool down.
It did.
Oh, it
did
it.
I was going to say, it was hot.
Oh, my God. That might be the most heroic fix I've heard of it. I mean, there was one guy who showed up on Thursday, one guy with like an E36 or something, who showed up on Thursday. And finished, I think, one lap at the end of the day on Sunday, having pulled his entire engine apart like twice. But oh man, there are some heroic fixes at that.
Yeah,
you
get all the way out there, you gotta fix the car and get back out. You can't just turbo broke, we're done for the weekend.
How many turbos do you keep around too?
Well, I mean, that's the first one that we actually lost. And I think it's because we run so much anti-lag through that car. Because, puts out the big flames, really cool.
Yeah.
So we run it on that car a lot, and I think that's what toasted on that car. Because we haven't lost the turbo on the race car at all. But we don't run the anti-lag on the race car.
So the anti-lag's just for fucking show? It's not functional?
It works.
Well, of course, I'm not saying it doesn't work, but if you don't run it on the race car and you run it on...
Well, we run nitrous on the race car.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why.
So the nitrous is a little more effective because it's easier to program. As in, it rolls in, helps spool the boost, and when the boost hits 14 pounds, the nitrous cuts off. Mm-hmm. So it's there just specifically to light the turbo off, whereas the anti-lag... it's constantly spooling the turbo. It's constantly hitting it. So as soon as you touch the pedal, it's like all 30 pounds running right into the motor.
Yeah.
So it's a little more like drastic, but it looks really cool.
Yeah, makes
sense. So like in competition drifting, it causes like a little too much shimmy. So we take it out.
Okay.
Do they have nitrous refilling stations at the at FD events?
Yeah, it's in my trailer.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
You bring extra tanks, or do you have a thing that pumps
it? Oh, yeah, we bring like 3 to 4 mother bottles. We have a pump on the wall, a compressor hooked up to it. But yeah, nice. For a minute there, we're pumping bottles for like 4 or 5 different teams. We're like, no, get your own.
Like, yeah, these are $10,000 a pop.
Yeah, right.
Nitrous is cheap. Ask me how I know that. you gotta get the dental grade one. They keep telling you that. The dental grade.
Leave it cracked loose a little bit,
bro. Listen, I went to college in Philly. We used to have Philly was the nitrous oxide capital of the universe.
Yeah,
because there was one place that would fill anybody's nitrous tank with dental grade nitrous for like $100.
You're a dentist, right?
Yeah. Tank.
We had something called Tank Sundays, and that's why I don't have a real job.
Boy Scouts is different there.
Yeah, totally.
Brian, I have a question. When you transferred, how long were you doing autocross before Sim? Or I guess was Sim first?
Yeah.
So did some of you, I was thinking when you were talking about tires, like did you already have that kind of practical education versus sim racing? Like in sim racing, you're not learning as much about compounds and different PSI and all that kind of stuff, right? Like you're not swapping tires and going, this one's the better one, because in a lot of games I've played, they're like, here's your car, it has tires. So was that, was there a curve there in your education when you got into road racing?
A little bit. I mean, I like to work with engineers who are way smarter than I am. So I usually let them figure that out. But in my own cars, when I autocross, mostly I would just go off of like what other people were doing, because I was a kid in college. I'm like, hey, what tire pressures are you running? What tire is that? And just figure out what the fast people are doing and do that and play around with it a little bit. But yeah, I didn't do any of that in sim racing, especially at the time, because it was you just get what you get. And there's no tire heat up or anything like that. You don't wear out your tires. Now you get that. Now you get marbles off the edge of the track and or the edge of the line and all that stuff too. But yeah, back when I was learning, it was all the sim stuff was all just run the same lap every single lap all day long because nothing changes.
But so when did because I don't even really know this. When did you start doing like your tire review portion for like Hankook and those other manufacturers compared to when you were doing like the GT3 racing?
So that was let me try to remember. think that was around just after I got out of like World Challenge and stuff like that, and I started doing some tire testing stuff.
So, what is the best tire for track day? now that we know,
I can't even keep up with them all.
Yeah,
it's like it's the craziest tire war I've ever seen in any like
GT
form of motorsports. No, seriously,
like, that's why Brandon's here.
Okay, so yeah,
I've been sitting in this corner this entire time, so waiting for my moment.
To your point, we were running 127s at Big Willow in the 370Z GLTC car with the GT radials on it, three tires.
Uh-huh.
Which, yeah, I don't know times there, but
that's,
I think
that's fast.
Reasonable for street tires.
That's pretty fast.
Like, is it?
Yeah.
I was gonna say I don't know what like a proper time is.
Yeah, I mean like not cool that I'm anything special, but I did a 130 in the new Lamborghini STO. Like with
does a what?
I did a 30 in the Lamborghini STO, which is on like Corsas.
Mm.
Pirelli Corsas, and is it Trofeo R's? Pirelli Trofeo R's, and what's his name? Richard Antonucci did a 26 there. He's like Lamborghini's driver.
Whoa.
on the same car.
Yeah, well, RZ did a 27.
Lost his tires.
I mean, that's fucking for a Z. That's really fast.
It was so the Z is, and at that time, that was only the second time it was ever out. So it was still very fresh, still a full H pattern. The weight wasn't like 100% yet, because like we like basically rebuilt the whole car after that skip day event.
And no ABS.
Anything in the 20s is fast.
Oh yeah, no ABS on that one either. So the ABS wasn't working yet. It didn't have the dog box yet, and it was actually on 20 mil smaller tire than it was actually allowed to be on, because it's allowed to be on 315s at that weight, but they only make a 295.
Oh yeah.
So like per that kind of tired of weight, and it was running full power, which full power is 300 wheel. So
yeah,
and that thing was scooting.
That's really fast in a fucking Z.
Yeah, if it had like the GT slicks on it, probably could have picked off a couple more.
I'm sure.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, especially at that track, which is just grip and
it's
bravery.
All lateral grip. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because I mean, those the tires that he was on. It's like I said, it's the GT radial drift tire, so it's a 295/40. Super tall, so it's probably got like a lot of squish on it, for road racing, because it's built for drifting. And then also, what was I gonna say? It is it's pretty heavy compared to a slick, like the GT, because like there's GT radio, like the letters G and T, and then GT, GITI, is the parent company.
Oh,
and they make like proper slicks, like what Monster ran on his. Electric
Pike
car
Speak?
Up the hill,
oh,
Pike
yeah.
Speak, yeah. So he was on like the GT
Boy,
slick.
Boy, that is a confusing branding exercise, isn't
a little bit. Yeah.
Well, so should have a little conversation with them. Listen, guys, this is hard to promote on a radio show.
Well, as far as America is concerned, it's GT radio. That's like our version. So, but the parent company, like the global company, it started as GITI. So. That's where they obviously came up with the name. But yeah, so they make a proper slick, but it's not DOT, so we can't run it in the Grid Life Touring Cup.
Well,
so that's why we were putting it on
those. Slicks shouldn't be DOT, so
yeah.
I'm okay with that rule.
Most of the field, because most of the field runs on the Hoosiers. And
if they let people run actual slicks on the street here in California, you would see the number of crashes that you would see in the canyons would be staggering.
Well, they already can't handle a drop of rain without slicks.
Were you here when it rained last week? You weren't here.
Oh yeah,
it was a fucking disaster.
Oh, it's
instant
funny, like,
disaster.
My buddies that work in a body shop, they're like, oh, we love when it rains.
Yeah,
I'll go dropping off some bumpers and body kits to them, like, and it just happened to rain the week before, and the lot is just full.
Dude, nobody changes their tires here. Yeah. Nobody changes their fucking wiper blades. Nobody gives any extra distance.
Well, not even the trucks will change their tires. Oh. The trucks are running like 33-inch slicks.
Oh. I think people drive faster in the rain. Around here? Yeah.
Well,
they speed up.
Well, look, in fairness, if you've got a properly set up car, the cops are really lazy here, and they don't go out in the rain. So it's a really... it's an objectively great time to speed. if you've got a car that is prepared and you're mentally prepared for rain, it is objectively a good time to speed. Because they have a choice. They don't have to go out in the rain. It's so few times. They don't give a fuck. They're chilling. They're doing paperwork on the rain days. They're not in the car. I've never heard of anybody being pulled over in the rain in California, ever.
That's funny. I love how you guys talk about rain here in California like we talk about snow in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it rained last week. And I'm like, what? It rains like every other day.
Well,
where I live.
Because that's the same amount of frequency. It rains as often here as it snows in New Jersey. Yeah. Seriously.
That's crazy to think about.
And when it rains, crash rate is about the same. It's a shit show here. Because not only because of the drivers, but because LA is not set up like it, because it doesn't rain, the infrastructure is not set up for rain, and so there's enormous puddles everywhere. It does nowhere drains properly, so the conditions really fucking deteriorate fast. So, dude, if all of us, you know, you've ever heard of the Santa Ana winds? It's like a thing. If the wind always blows off the ocean, right?
Right.
Except when it doesn't. When it doesn't, it's shit is so bad that they fucking have a name for it. The Santa Ana winds is just the wind blowing the other way.
Right.
And like fucking the amount of shit that comes off of trees when the wind
can, it's going the other direction.
Yeah. The whole city is set up for wind that comes off the ocean, and when it turns around for a day, trees are down everywhere. It's fucking crazy.
Chaos.
Yeah.
Yeah, they call it the Santa Anas.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's fucking,
is the city invading? No. Santa Anas is coming
for us. Yeah. And especially where I live down by the beach, like fucking shit, palm fronds are flying through windows. It's fucking crazy down there. Yeah.
Well, that's funny. I would have never guessed that.
I mean, our own set of natural disasters.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite a few, it sounds like, in California.
Oh, yeah. There was an earthquake last week, too.
Yeah. We don't have those in New Jersey.
That was fun.
Brandon got to experience his first one.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, he's terrified. He didn't even want to come back out for this event.
The one, like, 2 weeks ago?
It was during Long Beach.
Yeah, during Long Beach. A couple weeks ago.
Yeah. It was up in a hotel room, so 10 stories up.
Sway?
Oh, yeah. We were on the 16th floor. Okay. I walk out of the bathroom, and the whole thing is shaking. I'm like, nope. Back to New York.
There's a couple different guys. There's the roly wavy ones. Those are really fun. That's where you go, am I wasted?
Yeah.
And then you have to check the pictures on the wall to see if they're doing this. And then there's the one that feels like a car just drove into the building. Those are my favorite.
Yeah.
It's just one hard fucking bang, just like a car just dragged into the building. Yeah. And my cats fucking lose their shit. the slow vibrate-y ones like last week. Yeah. The cats are good predictors, too.
Yeah.
The cats, we were having dinner the other night, and there was probably 2 months ago, and there was an earthquake. All of a sudden, all three of our cats, which sit on our table while we're eating dinner, they all look to the east. They all just go, look to the east. 3 or 4 seconds later, bam! One big fucking hit. I was like, whoa, they knew. It's crazy. They could hear it.
They probably heard it coming.
Yeah.
Wow. Crazy.
Mm-hmm. Not enough time to make any kind of practical moves, though, unfortunately.
Yeah. It's a shame. Can't save yourself on that.
The cats are looking.
Yeah. So how do you guys rank Irwindale on the FD calendar? I know you like it because you get to go real fast.
Yeah.
You guys feel the same way? Do you have enough power to go fast enough to make the banking fun?
So I haven't driven Irwindale yet.
Oh, really?
But I flew out last year before this whole thing came to fruition, and I watched the track in person, and I was like, whoa.
Fast.
Like, I've gone like 180 plus in McLarens with like barely a sweet helmet, you know, just like a normal open face helmet on, and was not even slightly scared. And I watched this track like in person. I was like, this is no joke. Like, drifting this track is serious, because it's probably one of the higher speed tracks, especially for us pro spec guys, because we only do 4 rounds rather than 8. And it looks intimidating. I think the car will be fine power-wise. I mean, we're still on a pretty small tire.
Oh, yeah.
Regardless of how much grip that tire makes, it's still small for how fast our cars are nowadays. So we're definitely going to loosen it up and probably have to add a lot of wheel speed into it. But I'm not too worried about the car making it around it. I'm super excited to drive it, though. It's such a prestigious track in drifting. It's got to be one of the oldest, right, in FD calendar. Yeah. So.
It's funny, the word Irwindale and prestigious. Really? It's not the word I would have used.
It's a good point, that, though, to look at it like that, because like for us drifters, it is. And that's what I think is so cool about the sport of drifting, is like we could take something that to like, you know, the people in your position in the world, you think that that place is kind of not what it is to
No,
us?
I'm just, you I'm fucking
I
mean? Around. I'm
I know, but it's funny that
Willow
it,
Springs
us, it's so
is
cool.
prestigious too, in, yeah. in a way. But like right. when they filmed Ford versus Ferrari there, they didn't have to dress it up at all.
Yeah.
They just put some Shelbys there and went, oh, well, that just looks exactly
back.
Right.
Yeah. yeah. I noticed actually on the, I was flying out here last night, and in the new Fast and the Furious, they use Irwindale Speedway.
Oh, yeah.
In it. Because I like, saw for a second, I was like, what? I'm like,
they use
minute,
it for a
I'm
bunch
going.
Of shit. Yeah, they use yeah. it for a bunch of shit, and they also they've used it in other like NASCAR movies and stuff too. Right. Yeah, they've it, there's it's fun to spot, you know, SoCal tracks, and they yeah. used a yeah. fucking auto club and, instead of Daytona in Ford versus Ferrari, and I'm like, come on,
yeah, yeah.
it's all right.
Like, come on, guys.
They made that movie on a smaller budget than you would have think. You would have yeah. thought, yeah. yeah.
And they did a great job because, yeah. like, you know, I was doing the same thing, trying to pick out. Like, you see Road Atlanta in there,
Road Atlanta.
Yeah. A little bit.
They used sections of Road Atlanta and sections of VIR to yeah. be Le Mans.
Yeah.
And then they used the Porsche Experience Center track mm-hmm. in Atlanta to be the Ford's proving grounds. Which I'm like, how the fuck did they make? Why did Porsche sign off on that one?
Yeah,
yeah right.
That was an interesting one.
So yeah, they did a good job at like you know masking things. Up,
and, and they use the Hyundai yeah. proving grounds to be Riverside.
Oh, okay.
Where cool. Where Ken Miles dies at the mm-hmm. end. You ever been out there?
No.
Hyundai Proving Grounds is awesome. It's out in the middle of the fucking desert right. By Mojave, and they have an enormous high-speed oval, and right. they have a really great, what they call a winding road, which is it's a road course, but it's just the width of a road.
Right.
Can you get it on? Can we get it on Google Maps?
So what are they trying to prove?
Damn!
If their cars are not shitboxes, mainly. Yeah, look on the left here.
What?
On the left, their winding road course is it's you can't
oh,
really
wow,
see it there,
wow.
and it, and this photo makes it look a lot smaller than it is. That
That's
skid pad
local.
On the right is literally the biggest skid pad I've ever been on,
wow.
And that winding road has a lot of elevation in it. It's actually for the desert. It's actually pretty cool. It's a nice rig.
And this, that's the inner oval like is the scariest miles. Oval I've ever seen.
The inner oval, yeah. You know what those that you know what those are? They have different surfaces.
Oh, cool.
So that on the inner oval, see there? See they've got
yep.
they have different surfaces that simulate different types of freeways.
Right.
So they've got like the light gray is like the California expansion joint freeway.
Oh, perfect.
And
my
then
favorite.
The asphalt, yeah. whatever, right? There's a lot of manufacturers that don't test on that.
Oh my god.
Like you ever drive like an
Do
AMG
any of the
an
truck
AMG black
manufacturers test on those? Freaking broke our teeth out on the way up here.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, right.
If you're hungover and someone's driving you on that freeway,
yeah. Dualies are not stoked on California freeways.
Oh, yeah. Dualies are brutal.
Yeah.
They beat the shit out of you, mm-hmm. don't they?
Yeah.
Did you haul all the cars out from East Coast?
No, my shop is down Costa Mesa.
Oh, whoops.
Yeah.
All right.
I do.
That's it for me.
Yeah, I do
you
come
do?
From East Coast. Yeah, I have an F450 like dually pickup truck with a 48-foot trailer.
Oh,
me
nice.
And one of my best friends growing up. He and I split the trailer, and we do all the FD rounds together out of my rig, basically.
Oh, cool.
At least right now.
You drove the fucking thing out here too?
I didn't drive out here, no. But we had one of my crew guys. But all the other rounds, yeah. I've driven to the grid, one of the grid lives. I drove to all the rounds, St. Louis.
Man, that
yeah,
is
he's
a
year
fucking,
one. He's
that
already too
road.
Bougie to drive on the road.
Dude, that's exhausting.
Wait, he jumped from tiring. Privateer to Forsberg's team.
Right?
He's like, ooh, this is nice. Yeah. I got my drift limo. Like, your drift limo.
I actually really don't like flying. Like, it's just the whole thing. I'm not comfortable in it. I'm not like scared or anything about it. I just get really uncomfortable about it. So I most of the time I prefer to drive to things. So
you got to get the John Madden bus going, dude.
What's that?
John Madden, the football coach.
Yeah,
he was terrified of flying,
right.
So he had this sick tour bus that he would go. He'd literally drive to all the fucking games.
We got budget for that.
In 2 years, when everyone gets tired of the RVs
like
they've been buying
ago.
Over the last year, yeah. that's yeah.
These kids today.
I know. I drove my toter home, plus like you know dually and gooseneck setup to every round for I think 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that. Yeah, it was effort.
Yeah,
it's an effort.
It's exhausting.
Yeah,
it really is.
How do you have any energy left to race after that? Your eyes must be fucking on fire.
The toter made it better. So like, I did the dually setup for a year, and then I got the toter. So like, you know, it's got the little RV, you know, nonsense, and so you can you know crash out and keep driving. But yeah, you're just tired when you get there. So it's tough. Again, I'm just giving him a hard time.
Can we go back and talk about Alex? How you came up from you know, your private, whatever you want to call it, amateur, and then got picked, or I don't know, what did you have to win to get there?
So my story is interesting when it comes to becoming into professional drifting. It's, in my opinion, pretty unique because not a lot of guys have this particular opportunity that I have. And fortunately, I knew the right people and kind of was in the right place at the right time type of situation. I started drifting in 2014 at Club Loose in Englishtown, New Jersey. Oh, yeah. I built a 1JZ swapped S13 that one of my friends got me into drifting. He wired it all. He did all the work, and we went out, and it just, like, clicked. I came from motocross. So I had to work, like, super hard to compete at a very high level at motocross. And it was, like, super frustrating, and I got in a drift car. I'm not trying to sound, like, you know, conceited. But, like, I got in a car, and it, like, clicked to me. And, like, all the Club Loose guys were like, whoa, like, where do you come from? I'm like, I don't know. I just dirt bikes? Like, I don't really know. So it came very natural, and that was exciting to me. So I decided to run with drifting. I've
done rally. Motorcycling and that too, is how you really learn weight transfer.
Correct, yeah.
You know, if you've never been on a motorcycle and someone tries to explain weight transfer to you, and then you get on a motorcycle, oh, this makes all the sense in the world, you know, to change it. So it makes sense that it would go that way.
So I got into what's called US Drift, which is a Pro-Am series in 2015 with a very stock 1JZ car, made like 270 horsepower. Did pretty well, but I always was, like, obsessed with rally. So I took a couple years off. I went and explored rally and all that kind of stuff. And at the time, before all this, I went to Dirtfish Rally School. And
Love that place.
The reason why I really wanted to push for drifting was my instructor, Winston, was like, dude,
all you want
to
do. Yeah, well, you know Winston? He was my instructor. Yeah, I love Winston.
So he was like, dude, all
you
want to do.
I had Forrest, Chris, and Winston when I was working
what
up there.
What a trio.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Forrest Duplessis is Chris Duplessis' brother. And
Oh, yeah, I know Forrest
and the
well.
Three, I was telling them. And the three of those guys were the fucking G's up there.
Yeah.
Winston rules. Yeah, yeah, I've heard from him in forever.
Yeah, he was
Winston DeWart. There he is. Look at him looking all good.
He's an awesome dude. He's hysterical.
Yeah.
He was like, dude, all you want to do is drift. Like, have you ever considered getting into drifting? And I'm like, I don't know. Sure, I guess so. So moral of where I'm going with this story is I was at Englishtown, New Jersey with a Dirtfish hat on, and one of Brandon and I's close friends, Billy Petro, he saw my Dirtfish hat. He's also like a rally guy. He was like, are you wearing a Dirtfish hat? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, we're going to be friends. And I'm like, all right. So I started working for Billy at the time as I was getting into competitive drifting and rally. And that's how I met Brandon, because Brandon has been close friends with Billy most of his life. He stored his cars at the shop I worked at, which is called Broken Motorsports at the time. Well, it's still called that. That's where I worked. So we just grew a relationship. We became friends over the years. We'd go drifting together and all that. And in 2018, I decided to pursue drifting again in a competitive style. So went out, had a terrible year in 2018. 2019 was even probably a worse year. Didn't really do very well. I had a lot of car issues. It was always a dumb car problem. 2020, something changed. You know, when COVID happened, I like sat back, kind of reevaluated the car, put more time into it, went out, and we podiumed every single event I did and won multiple in a row. And at U.S. Drift again, I was able to win a Formula Drift Pro license.
Did your philosophy about the car change? I mean, what did you just decide, like?
Well, in the year 2019, before that, I worked on two FD teams at that time, too. So I learned a lot in that process of working with Formula Drift teams. So I applied all that into my 2020 season with my Pro-Am car, and it worked really well. So I won my license, and I knew Brandon knew Chris and knew a lot of people in the sport. So I just texted him, and I was like, hey, dude, like, I want to do Formula Drift. Can I just pick your brain about some stuff? Just to talk. And he's like, yeah, dude, I'm managing Chris Forsberg's program now. I'm like, what? Just like, where did that come from? So it got into talks about, you know, just helping me with simple things, car setup, stuff like that. I met Chris at the track after one of my Gambler wins, which is kind of like a Pro-Am, but it doesn't count for Formula Drift. It's called the Gambler at Englishtown. And Chris is like,
I thought you were talking about the Gambler 500. I was like, wait, what?
No.
You can win that?
Yeah, no. It's an event at Englishtown. It's called the Gamblers. It's run by the Naps that own it. It's just for like money and bragging rights. Okay. It's like a Pro-Am style. Chris was there, and the next day, we met at Englishtown. They were just partying. He was driving his KA car out there, and he's like, dude, build a Z. And I'm like, all right, cool. Like, yeah, I could help you out the most with Zs. You know, like with setup, I could give you the most information. You know, maybe we can hook you up with some parts. We could figure stuff out. So it all came to be where we built my current 370Z. And just stemmed into this whole thing. I remember, it's weird. Like, I'm sure Brian could relate to this. Or maybe, I mean, you've been, it's different. All of us in this position, I think it's cool, is like we could all could relate to the moment where we're like, whoa, like, this stuff is real. Like, I mean, when you, with stuff with Nissan, like, to me, they called me on, it was like the first of 2020 or 2021, the first day of the year. I was loading my trailer to go do a shoot with Ryan Szymancyk. I don't know if you know who he is, but
yeah, nice guy.
Yeah,
my life as a rallyist.
Yep, he's
what's, he, what's Ryan up to now? I haven't heard from him in a minute, but I know he's doing something cool.
He's
what's Ryan doing right
he's,
now?
I talk to him every week. He's one of my closest friends. So he's been working more with Tangent Vector stuff again. He's been on a lot of shoots and editing, but
that's
most
why
of the time,
I haven't heard from him because JF has him in a fucking dark room somewhere.
yeah, that's exactly what. As we're talking right now, he's probably editing. He hasn't slept in probably 3 days, and he's probably pretty miserable.
Yeah, you can't work for JF until you become JF.
Yeah,
you have to give up your home. You have to stop showering, and you get instant diamond status on United.
Yeah, yes, you do.
Yeah,
yeah.
Here's the deal.
I've been there, dude. I know.
Yeah. But, I've done shoots with Ryan on Haggerty and all that. But, yeah, they called me, and they're like, hey, we want to, like, do this for real. Like, you're going to have a Forsberg Racing car, like, all this stuff. We want to manage your sponsor relations. Like, this is a pretty real deal. And, like, I remember that moment, and I was like, holy crap. Like, this is, for someone like me, like a kid that just grew up in New Jersey with no serious financial funding or anything like that, to just kind of get noticed from skill, luck, and the right timing was pretty surreal. It still is pretty
surreal.
To sit with people like you and everyone here is nuts. You know
we don't pretend to be good. We don't do anything.
But I've watched stuff of yours since I was a kid. Not to say that you're old, but
like,
I remember being in high school watching like you on the Super Speeders videos.
Oh yeah, those are
like
old.
That.
Yeah,
yeah, like all that kind of
don't
stuff.
Don't do any of that shit at home. That shit is mad dangerous. Don't do any of that stuff. Those tickets were real. I still suffer the consequences of those still today. Those are all very stupid.
Yeah,
man, don't do any of that shit.
Well, one of the cool things with Alex and coming up and when we first met, he was working in Billy's shop. You know, he's in his early 20s, and Chris was always his hero. He was always Chris Forsberg, and what was your Forza name? Forrest Faustberg.
Oh, yeah. So you know how there's like Cletus McFarlane and like all these other people. So me and Ryan Szymancyk, one day Brandon was there for it. I don't know what it was, and this is like I never even drank a sip of alcohol until I was 24. So this is when I was about like 21 years old, let's say. Like this was as sober as you could humanly be at work. Like Ryan picked up a camera and we made up this personality called Forrest Faustberg.
Okay.
So it was a combination. Actually, someone from Club Loose posted after one of the rounds, like, did Forrest Faustberg win Long Beach? And I saw the name. I was like, that's great. I love that name. I'm going to run with it. So we made this funny video. Oh, God, you're going to look it up.
Can we find it?
It's spelled wrong.
So
the Forrest is right.
F-O-U-S-T.
Yeah, F-O-U-S-T, Bert.
Like Tanner Faust.
So there's a lot of profanity in that video. Like a lot.
That's fine. We can't play it because of copyright laws.
Yeah.
But
okay.
We can tell people where to find it.
So they're on YouTube. Ryan made them. So he just picked up his camera and we just made this funny, like kind of like Southern accent personality around drifting. And there's a car that Brandon had called 87. It's a smashed up S13 that, I mean, it had a K-rail put through the quarter panel so far that the strut, like the whole quarter panel was wrapped over the strut tower in the back
yikes.
Of the car. That's how destroyed it was. So I put on like a Snap-on, I work for Snap-on if you don't know, but a Snap-on trucker hat, and I look over my helmet and we go out and like shoot funny videos drifting at Club Loose, like talking like a redneck and just making like comedy
Snap-on
jokes.
I bet Snap-on loved that shit.
that was before I worked for Snap-on.
That went the other way. Right? You want a job. You really fit in what we're looking for in an employee.
Yep. Exactly. So we just made these funny Forrest Faustberg videos and whatnot. And it also stemmed like and all that with Chris and whatnot. So the name was Forrest Wang, Tanner Faust, and Chris Forsberg.
Yeah.
It was a combination of like all three names.
Yeah.
Like at the time, I know this is funny because all the history with you and Forrest way back when. But like I had a Jay-Z and all that and into the similar kind of cars as Forrest. And then like I always admire Tanner Faust's, just as ability to do anything so well too.
Yeah.
And then obviously Chris, you know, he's like an idol in a way of how he built this himself and didn't come from like a lot of money and did exactly what I would kill to do one day, but never thought I'd have the opportunity. So it was cool to have like idols in a way all tied into a name that was just meant around comedy. So that's really where it came from.
You should bring it back.
We've thought about it.
Bring it back. Put that shit on the car. Get a helmet.
We did.
Get a themed helmet.
They did. They put it on my car.
Oh, they did.
So
nice.
They threw me out to do like this team announcement thing, and I drove his TTZ car, and it said like Forsberg on the side. So we grabbed like a piece of blank white tape, and we strapped it over his name, and wrote Faustberg. We had one of our friends do it. But we put it on with like letters backwards, and that was like our funny joke to start.
That's hilarious.
So
yeah, you got to get Club Loose with Forrest Fassberg by Ryan Samantha.
Forrest Fassberg.
2015, 2016. Yeah. There you go. Oh, in YouTube years, that's old.
Yes,
that's an old video in YouTube years. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's funny.
It's all just because Ryan, like me and Ryan,
we should definitely put that on the Drift Taxi as like as the co-driver, like you know, like the fucking thing. When you were rallying, what were you driving in a rally car?
Also a Nissan. I had an S13. Really? I had a Ford Fiesta.
Oh, rear-wheel drive rally?
Oh, yeah.
That's true. If you're going to go two-wheel drive, you might as well go rear-wheel drive.
Yeah.
Front-wheel drive rally sucks.
Exactly,
I tell Chris Duplessis I said that shit, too.
Front-wheel drive rally?
Drive rally sucks. It's hard. It sucks like autocross sucks. It's really hard to be good at it. I don't want to go pick up fucking cones for 2 hours either. Respect. It's hard, but I don't want to do that shit.
It's different. I agree with
13-time champion Brian is just like,
when you're broke, you get your track time anywhere you can.
I actually got my 240 SX rally car in a funny story. Before I started working for Billy Petro, when I got into drifting, I had a kid I went to high school with. Mm-hmm. He got this like S13. It was plasti dipped. It had a built SR in it, and it was all beat up. And whatever the case is, I traded a Trek bicycle.
Nice.
For an SR swapped S13 hatch. That had
what? That's a great idea.
Only one of those went up in value since that trade.
It was doing me wrong. It was like a Trek.
You don't know about the Trek bicycle. Collector market, Zach.
Like, it was a pretty nice bicycle. It was like whatever they call like
bringabikerack.com.
Road
bikes.
I use it for training when I race dirt bikes. But yeah, the kid, I was like, I'll trade you this bike. It's worth like $1,000. You go sell it. And he's like, all right, whatever.
That's hilarious.
I took the car, and I'm like, now what am I going to do with it? Like, I always wanted to do rally. So at the time, I was becoming friends with Billy Petro, and he had a 240 SX rally car too. So I was like, all right, we'll just build this.
What series was it? It's East Northeast, right?
Yeah, at the time, I did like NASA Rally Sport events and Rally America.
Oh, yeah.
And then I got into starting to do ARA, which is what it is currently, mm-hmm. and I was going to do it with the Fiesta. But we ended up just not even pushing. I sold the car and all that. So I still have my 240SX rally car to this day, though.
But it's a good time, though, right?
Rally?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the most amazing thing you could ever do.
You ever try it?
I have done it. I haven't like entered a race, but I've like ripped around like rally tracks. I did like a little thing at Dirtfish. I did a little thing at with Finnegan on his Faster Finnegan show, and like, but never entered an actual race.
Fucking fun!
It's cool.
I've only ever done it at the schools, but it's really fun.
Yeah.
And if you had to pick consumer advice, if regular people had to pick, like, what driving school should I do?
Mm-hmm.
Always do a rally school first.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you just learn so much about car control and your weight transfer, and you're fucking sideways
it
half
slows
the time.
Everything
brilliant.
Down. Yeah. I did get to do the Nora 500 last weekend.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
in what?
It was a Polaris Fraser.
Oh, kick ass.
But yeah, so four-wheel drive, you know, and it's, you know, I got my co-driver, Kegel Johnson.
Holy shit, look at that photo. Is that you in
the
air?
That's not me. That's RJ Anderson.
That was the biggest air I've, like, ever seen in a fucking Razor.
Yeah, that was a big one. Yeah, that was,
That's enormous air in a fucking Razor.
Doing a video with NOS Energy Drink. So
oh, wow.
Just helping him a little promo on that. But, we took that thing down. There's the team, and it was awesome. It was a super fun experience. And, you know, I got, like you said, my buddy Kegel, he's co-driving with me, and so he's on the nav reading the notes off, you know, just, like, reading the degree of the turn, the direction, you know. And so that was, like, first time I ever really did, like, notes racing as well.
How did that work in your brain?
That was great. Yeah. And it's funny because there was definitely at least five or six moments because it's the 500, and so we split it. You know, the rig would get about like 150 miles out of the tank because we put like a 30-gallon tank in it. So me and my buddy Dylan, he was the other driver, so we swapped like halfway through each day. It was 250 miles a day because they do it like rally style stages. Yeah. So I drove first shift both days, and he drove the second shift. So
how long are the stages?
Anywhere from like 80 to 130 miles.
Oh, that's big stage.
Yeah,
yeah. That's a big stage.
Yeah, so we did that. And what was he getting at? Oh, yeah. So, like, he's doing the pace notes. And, oh, yeah. So, there was, like, four or five times where I noticed, like, completely, like, not really listening and thinking about, like, not, like, what am I going to have for dinner? But, like, something like, oh, I got to make sure to tell Dylan this. Because, feeling something in the car, you know, oh, we should maybe bump the tire pressure up. I felt it, like, kind of bottom out a little too hard. Like, maybe, like, we're, you know, just taking guesses at setup and stuff. So, I'm just thinking about other stuff. And all of a sudden, I'm like,
wait, what? Left to right.
Like that split second of like, oh, I got to make sure like to like check this strap or like check this, torque the wheels or like just any sort of like thing about like the vehicle itself that was like kind of coming to me during the race.
Yeah.
And you'd miss that one note and you're just all of a sudden like,
Where the fuck am I?
Stab the brakes and like repeat. But it happened like maybe once an hour.
And it's desert. It's desert, right?
Yeah, it's desert. And so, like the 90% of it's like one lane. So it's like kind of rally-esque, where it's like you got a cliff on the one side, you got a hillside on the other, and you're mobbing.
Yeah.
And so it was really, really cool.
How did you find the physical challenge compared to drifting? You know, drifting you do
it was
a lap or two or whatever.
It was way easier than I thought.
Oh, wow.
Like
long travel rules.
Yeah, big old cushy ride. But yeah, I thought I was gonna like fatigue fast or just, you know, get tired or just mentally exhausted. But like I said, just those few quick moments where like I realized like, oh, like we're still in the middle of a race. Like you can't take your mind off it for like a half second because you'll miss the turn. And so, but yeah, I absolutely love it because I've never done any long distance like racing like that, especially, you know, with notes, like not having any experience on where I'm going or what I'm doing. You know, it's not like, oh, we're just going to run this track for 4 hours and I know every turn and how fast I can go.
And did you did I hear you say you alternated driving with your buddy?
Yeah. So
did you read the notes also? You were
co-driving? No, I didn't do co-driving. So me and Kegel, so I was driving, he was co-driver, and then Dylan and his buddy Noah were the other pair.
So we pulled in to refuel. Oh, okay.
Because it was like you race a stage and there's a transit stage and then you race a stage. So in the transit stage, that's what's kind of nice about Nora. It's like way more relaxed. It's not like the Baja 1000 where like start to finish, you're going as fast as you can. It's like you basically, you hit the finish line and you have like 30 minutes to reach the start line, which is only 10 minutes away.
Oh, okay, cool.
Right?
Yeah.
So you have like this little 20 minute buffer to like double check things. That's where we did our driver change, refuel, and then go back out. And so it was awesome.
Like rally, it was so fun.
Yeah,
it was a lot like rallies. It was. That's a long, that'd be, imagine a 130 mile rally stage.
Yeah, the car would never make it. Like, I don't care.
No rally car would make it.
No rally car. No WRC car is making it that far.
So this is us doing a little testing. We found this lot and just went out and just gave it a quick rip before we headed out to, this is in SoCal.
Where is that? Is it Hungry Valley?
I'll tell you later. But like we used to go test. Oh, it's great. We used to go test in like Ocotillo. And so it's like, you know, it's a 5 hour lap just to get there and back.
Yeah.
And someone told us about this spot and they're like, yeah, like it's pretty sure it's open. Oh, so we're like,
definitely.
We're like, let's give it a whirl.
Remember to get this because we need a spot. We got
it's
fucking
a good spot, man.
We got fined for filming. You've seen that Baja 911 that TJ Russell dude built?
Yeah.
I got to have a go in that.
Ooh.
And it was fucking so next level. Sweet. But we got a $600 filming without a permit ticket in Hungry Valley.
Well, where we went, there was guys shooting guns into the hillside.
Oh,
so,
really?
That's a good sign.
Shit you not, there was at least one ricochet that sounded way too close.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. Because, I mean, they were pretty far away, but you just hear it's like, ding! Like,
and is that a spec vehicle?
That one?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was in turbo modified class.
Okay.
So it's a stock chassis. It's not like the unlimited chassis, but Nora, they had, I don't want to say so few entries, but they basically roped us with the unlimiteds, right? So the like guys that were in front of me in line are like, you know, they have like the full tube chassis. And the difference between like that and an unlimited is essentially the unlimited, you're allowed to cut everything above the bottom plane, right?
Oh.
So the bottom plane you keep to set the wheelbase.
Uh-huh.
And then from there, you can make whatever you want up top. So they redo all their suspension mounts taller. You can get longer shocks on there, longer travel, and they set the, you know, the center of gravity lower. With this, you know, we're stuck with the, I don't want to say stuck, but you're utilizing the stock suspension points. So it looks like kind of tall, but you have to get the full range of motion. And also, so like your seating position is a little higher, like they're sitting down and back, because they all use the four-seater chassis as well, but they make them two-seaters.
Oh, wow. Right.
Way more stable, right?
Yeah, it's a longer wheelbase, so it's better, but then they lower their, you know, seating position, they move it back, and they get more in the center of the car, handles a little bit better. But so they put us in the same class as those guys, and this is our first race ever. After day one, we were third in class and ninth overall out of 90 cars.
Wow. All right.
Wow.
Yeah, so are you making passes on the trail then?
Oh, yeah. I passed a dozen guys out there. It was nuts.
That's fucking so sketchy.
That's rad.
It was absolutely nuts.
That's because like what's cool so about shady.
Nora? Yeah, what's cool about Nora is so it's very much like they do like the stages style, and they also have so inside you have this thing called like the Stella, where it's a safety device, but it's also a call out device. So if you break down, you push like you know a breakdown button, so they know where you're at, uh-huh. and it will like send a message to you. It says like doctor, like are you okay type
yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
And you like answer like yes or no. It's like three buttons. There's an SOS button like where like I need medical help, and then there's also
that's probably a good idea.
That's a good idea. Yeah. And then there's also a pass button. So, like, as you approach a car, if you're within 300 feet, you can start pressing that button.
Oh.
And
so then they'll give you a point buy or something?
Yeah.
Oh,
and, like, so
Rally needs this method. Yeah. Rally so needs this so bad. Yeah.
So they will, so what they're supposed to do in Nora, because it's a no contact, no nerfing sport, because they do a lot of vintage cars in the series.
Yeah.
So it's cool. You see all these rad, like, old school builds. But yeah, so you ask for the point buy, and they are supposed to acknowledge, and then when there's a safe spot, they kind of like, move up into a bush. Let you buy.
Not everybody
did that.
No, but that's still a good thing to have because, like, you can't see shit behind you with rooster tails. Nuts. Like,
that's why you watch Baja and everyone's honking at each other and like banging people's bumpers. Like, move, dude. Yeah. You don't want
to
get over.
It's insane when you want to get someone to. My first ever stage in a rally ever. I was the last car to start because we didn't pass tech for the first day, so we had to fix the car and go out for the second day. So Ryan Symancyk's my co-driver, actually.
Okay.
My first 2 miles into the very first stage, I catch one of Chris Duplessis's rental cars. It's a Kitty Smiles Rally Adventure. Was it on a Ford? So this, you ever want to see someone driving their mirrors? I come flying down the stage behind this Ford Fiesta, and this kid must have been preparing for me to be doing this.
Yeah.
He saw me come up and just drove off the stage into a swamp. Like, damn, what are we going to do? It's only been 2 miles in. And the kid just goes, whoop, boom. Like, Ryan will tell you the story.
Deductible achieved.
And I'm just like, Ryan, is that what usually happens? He's like, no, dude, usually you're like stuck behind him. Oh, my God. He just drives off into the swamp.
I gotta imagine the risk of renting a fucking rally car. Wow.
Yeah.
You got to be ready for that one.
It's a big down payment on that one.
Yeah. But it seems like these side-by-sides are like the most affordable way into off-road motorsport.
It's the fastest growing like off-road class for sure. So there's so many classes now, which is cool and like in like the score racing. But yeah, I guess Nora, they just kind of clumped them together because there's a handful of them, but there is mostly like all the cool vintage trucks. And there's a couple like pre-runner, like high pre-runner level, like trophy truck status. But yeah, I mean, it was just an incredible time, you know, like just being able to, like I said, like working off of notes. That was like the first time I've ever done that, and it was awesome.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Keeping focus is hard.
Yeah.
You ever watch those videos of Sebastian Loeb and he doesn't blink?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He fucking keeps his eyes open for like 8 minutes. the fuck is wrong with this guy?
Yeah.
Fucking freaks.
My programmer has told me to not blink, so I don't blink.
Yeah, literally. Chris Duplessis, he's really good at telling this story, but when he worked at Team O'Neill Rally School, he had these people that I guess from like the military or something that had these glasses that would track your eyes.
Oh, cool.
So they put him on him, and they were doing with a bunch of athletes and stuff like that. They put him on him, and they set him out on stage, goes out, does his run or whatever, comes back, and they're like, oh, sorry, it's broken. It out-registered what it could read. Go out and try it again. And every time it came back and it was faulting, and because they didn't believe that how much he had to look at. Like while he's on stage, he's looking there, he's looking here, he's looking all over, and the glass it went out of like the glass to capture, and they were like mind blown that that's where you're looking to go out and compete in rally.
That's crazy.
Way.
We just had Alana Shear from Car and Driver on the show last week, and she just did like drag racing school.
Right.
And they were teaching her about like really about your points of focus when you're drag racing, because when you're driving like a 5 second drag car, like if you glance to the side for like, you know, an eighth of a second, you're now like 200 yards further down the road. And and apparently your eyes can't focus while moving. Like your eyes you don't see anything until your eyes stop. And so they were trying to like train her to like not move your fucking eyes for those 5 seconds, because you'll be somewhere else by the time you come back.
It might not be somewhere you want to be.
Yeah, apparently at speeds that fast, like overshooting the finish line is a very dangerous risk if you're going a 5 second drag car.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we got a lot of questions from the people. It's that time, right,
Zach? We got a couple.
We got a few. Oh, that's more than a few. All right, these are from our Patreon. If you want to ask questions to our in-studio guests, you must be a patron, which you can do at
patreon.com/thesmokingtirepodcast. You can also get a totally ad-free experience and get the shows the same day they are recorded, not wait until Tuesday, Thursday, like all those other ad-listening plebeians. Martin Bueno.
Who we love very much, by the way.
Who we also love. Do you guys wish drifting at the highest level... Do you wish... drifting at the highest level should keep going up to 1,200, 1,500 horsepower, or do you wish peak was 500 to 800 horsepower at the pro level? I almost feel like the cars need so much grip for 1,000 horsepower that they're getting too twitchy. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that.
You wish there was a horsepower cap?
It doesn't need to be a horsepower cap. It's just we were talking about this weekend at when I was down in Brazil, and they have a similar weight to tire restriction as we do in FD, but it's like 30 millimeters smaller, right? So the car that I was driving is the same way as my pro car, but I'm only allowed to run down there a 265. And so in FD, it's a 295. So you basically adjust the power for the tire, right? And the tire is based on the weight of the car. So, you know, every manufacturer only makes a specific size tire, and you basically weight your car up to that. So it is now turning into, yeah, you're allowed a lot of grip. And, like, even with, you know, them being on 255, it's still a quick car, right? It's still really fast.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's a 40 mil smaller tire, much less sidewall, and they'll still get around the track, like, relatively the same speed. But, you know, it's diminishing returns, right? So, like, you're shaving off fractions of an inch, but you're gaining a lot of, you know, movement in the car, and it's not as smooth. And
you're making a lot more smoke too, right?
It's a lot of smoke because you have to put down, you know, you have the more weight pushing down tires, so you need more power to push the tires. And so, like, that's why they're just plummeting so much more smoke. So I like the idea of toning it down, because it will also generate less smoke. It still will be, like, you know, obviously very smoky, but I think it will look a little less insane as far as, like, just the amount it leaves on the track. It's getting a little ridiculous.
Just add a fucking fog machine in the back.
Yeah, I know, right?
It gets to be ridiculous.
It's a little nuts when you're just staying there waiting for the track to air out on certain
That's why
certain
I won't
places.
Go to Irwindale unless I can get up in a skybox.
Down in that lower bank?
I won't
it's
sit
mental.
In the fucking grandstands at Irwindale. Yeah. Fuck no.
No, it's
skybox or bust, dude.
Yeah.
And following through the smoke is probably the biggest thing for me to come from pro spec or pro am to pro spec. Is just how much more smoke these cars generate. And when you're transitioning through the smoke or following it all, I know Taylor Holt said this too. I listened to your guys' podcast. It's like you're driving completely blind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, you have no idea if that person's going to make it or not. And it's a those few seconds of when that happens, I can't even describe to you what goes on in your brain. You're like, this is bad. This is scary for a second. Come through it, and then you're like,
you're
fine.
You're basically waiting to smash into something.
Yeah.
You're
like,
Brian, you're going 70 miles an hour, yeah.
The blind? How are you in blind? Yeah.
Not good. I did a race at COTA in the wet. It was very wet, and I was starting like 15th in the GTR. I couldn't see anything. I was braking by, like, okay, there's the bump before the corner, so I'm going to brake here. And if somebody spun out in front of me, I'm going to hit him.
Yeah,
you just can't see anything.
Yeah, Brian doesn't do, well, he has slid a car around, but Brian's like strictly road racing. So, like, yeah, what he's comparing it to is it's essentially the same with, like, yeah, the rooster tail coming off the car. So in the wet, like, it's the same thing. Like, you're just looking for the blinking light. But how many years in the GTR?
GT3
car? 2 years?
Yeah.
So raced on, you know, basically like the highest level in road racing in America outside of, if you call NASCAR that. But
NASCAR or in Indy, maybe.
Indy's probably the highest level
of road racing in America.
Probably the highest level of, like, GT car.
That's what I kind of mean. Not, like, open wheel and things like that. So, yeah, like, as far as, like, a GT car, like, yeah, the World Challenge was pretty cool. So, seeing him, like, watching some of the old videos of him, like, racing that car and some of the passes you're pulling off, like, getting around those things, it's like, yeah.
Dude, wet racing is sketchy as fuck.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I love it. That's how
you know racing driver's good to go. They're like, oh, it's raining, put me in the car.
Well, that was like when we were in Brazil, shady. It was raining on the first day and the car was having engine problems. They're like, oh no, like, everyone's getting bummed out. Like, oh, it might rain this week. I'm just like, bring it. I might actually make it.
I saw
it was working great there.
Lucas Seawar just wants to give a shout out to Alex. You know that dude?
I know him very well. He used to always stop by Broken Motorsports. He's worked with Ryan too. He helped us do some shoots and whatnot. He's a nice guy.
Yeah, Lucas is awesome.
Yeah,
hey, Lucas.
Great dude.
Alex Paraskevas wrote a very long question. I'm just going to read the important part. Autocross has a reputation of being a dry, boring, stand around a lot for 6 hours for only 4 minutes of seat time motorsport. That's a pretty accurate description. What makes it worth it for Brian year after year?
Well, so first of all, I think I've only won 10 championships. I don't know where 13 came from, but...
I mean, listen, you didn't. We'll take it. Yeah.
I mean, it's just what I always did. It's what I could do, you know, when I was, you know, in high school and college and stuff. So I just met people there that became like family to me. It's just like you love to see your friends. And I go to nationals every year, except I missed this year. And it's like you're seeing friends that you haven't seen all year, but you get to see them and they're your buddies. So I typically
haven't seen that. So you just like, you actually like the social element of it? And
I mean, the saying is you come for the cars, you stay for the people. And it's kind of become a cliche, but it's true. I like that about it, and I don't mind standing around watching cars go fast. I don't know. Like, I have to run for a cone every now and again, but, like, big deal.
It is really hard. I mean, and I imagine when you get really good at it, that I mean, winning a lot is a good reason to keep
That's what drew me to it initially. It's so hard, but it's so accessible.
Yeah.
So I could learn a lot and not spend very much money learning a lot.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I used to make fun of it, and then I've realized – as an adult, like, yeah, the consumables of road courses can be really high, or of road racing, crazy high. But for autocross, you can go there, and what's the entry fee? Usually, like,
$50
$50 for basically a quote track day, but you're learning turn in, braking, threshold, like, oversteer, understeer. Like, you're learning those lessons that will translate.
You're going through a lot in a very short period of time, you know, 40 to 60 seconds, you know, 4 or 5 times a day. And if you can stay focused that entire time and then, like, replay it in your head after the event, like, I would always do that on the drive home after the event. Like, okay, this is what the car did. This is what I did. So, like, what could I have done differently to be faster? It's actually very valuable seat time, even though it's not a lot, you know, for me anyway. Like, when I started doing track days.
What was your autocross car growing up?
My first one, well, my very first autocross, I borrowed my mom's Camry.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
With her permission. That's awesome. With her knowledge.
That's awesome.
That was the first championship.
That's when Chris saw you and he's like, he's our guy.
Yeah, no, I only did one event in that car, and I was so hooked on autocross, I got, I was in high school at the time, I just turned 18, so I got an 87 MR2 that I learned autocross in. And you were talking about weight transfer earlier. Like, I've never ridden motorcycles, but to me, like, now that I've had more experience in different cars, a mid-engine short wheelbase car teaches you a lot about weight transfer with your feet.
For sure, mm-hmm. Yeah, I could definitely see that. That's why I've always been a big no sway bar guy. Mm-hmm. I like the weight.
Yeah.
Like, in rally, I never ran sway bars and stuff like that. And drifting is always, like, this sway bar argument. It's, like, this funny, like, internet meme war now about running to sway bars or not. And I was always, like, very anti them. So now I kind of have to – once you get to the professional level, you have to use them to – tune the car, you know, properly to be as competitive. But I always like not running them for the weight transfer feel. Like, you got more, I like more of a soft car. You get the feel of what's going on. And I think that's from the rally side of things from me.
Cool. I think also, like, the big argument with that is because these guys are going from either no sway bars or, like, you know, inch and a half, you know, like Hotchkiss bars, like things like that. So it's a big difference if you're running them or not versus on the racing application. They're, like, fully tunable from, like, 100 pounds to, like, 2,000 pounds.
Yeah.
Jake, I feel like we got to this one earlier in the show. This is quite most difficult part of making the transition from sim racing to the actual track for Brian.
Well, I think the hardest part for me was that it was, I kind of went from basically just doing HPD and autocross and sim racing to being thrown into the world of road racing, and it was sink or swim, you know. Like, I'm going up against guys that have been karting since they were five.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have a couple decades of experience road racing and knowing what to do in every situation. And I'd studied racing. I'd watched racing on TV. So I only had that to go on. You know, I'd done sim racing and stuff. But it's a little bit different having that situational awareness when you can't see, like, your mirrors very well. Because, like, in sim racing, you got that virtual mirror, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, oh, I can just look right here and see everything that's going on behind me. It's like a backup camera. And back
with
when I started
road racing, and then a window net.
Yeah, we didn't have, like, now road race cars, most of them have cameras, so you kind of get that experience. But back
do the
when
GT
I was
cars
doing
even
racing,
have cameras now?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay.
Oh, yeah. But when I started, they didn't. So I'm like, where is that guy?
Yeah.
You know? That was probably the hardest thing.
Yeah.
That was actually one of seeing behind me was one of the hardest things. Not that I've done professional, but I've done like Champ Car and shit like that. Yeah. And Hans device with the seat.
Yeah, the Halo seat,
and
the cage behind
yeah,
you.
Yeah, like I actually like if someone's like in your blind spot, it's fucking literally a blind spot. Oh, it's really hard to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough. Yeah, I can see that.
It's funny how like claustrophobic it can be because like in drifting, like we don't run window nets, right? And so like we'll have like arm restraints. And, you know, we're looking out the side, you know, half the time. So you're kind of like, you know, looking out this way or like across the dash, like through the A-pillar. And then, you know, we're building the car for Brian, the Z. And we're like, you know, we got the roll cage in there. And I'm like kind of like looking at it. We're thinking about doing like the mid bulkhead, you know, as in like put the firewall on the main halo. That's how we do on the drift cars. So it's just a wall right behind us because, you know, we can't see behind us anyway. It's
all
smoke.
Yeah, yeah.
And my guy Kegel, he's like, don't you think he's going to want to like,
see,
I was just like, it didn't register for like 30 seconds. I was like, for what? He's going that way.
I wish you'd built it that way
we'll
to present
back him
to
into
him.
The pit.
Oh my god, that'd be funny.
Brian would be like, thanks for the car. I have a question.
This window sucks.
That's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, coming from the drift world, you were also surprised that I actually wanted ABS in a race car.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, so like, what's the ABS going to be? I was like, like kidding, right?
And you wanted the big stock mirrors too, right? The factory 370Z mirrors versus the little mirrors. We have to have mirrors in for like regulation.
Like technically,
we have to have mirrors, but they're in tandem drifting, especially the stock mirror is so large.
They get ripped off probably.
It's kind your way of seeing.
It consumes a lot of space to see. Because like you're basically looking at the mirror. So imagine like a modern mirror that's like this big versus like a little GT mirror.
Yeah.
So we're on these little things. We had those on for his first race. Yeah. And he's like, so can we
I need to see backwards too, guys, not just forward.
I had, you know, that Safari 911 that Lee Keen built me, and he put these rally mirrors on it, and I was like, bro, these are fucking trash. I can't parallel park this fucking thing. He's like, bro, it's for sending it through the woods. I go, I live in the desert. There's no woods.
Right. Yeah.
Can I have the stock mirrors back? And it could be like a desert rally car. And he's like, no, this is how we do it.
That thing is beautiful. What was the name of the color of yours again?
Cassis red.
I think that's the same exact color
that
Brian does.
B-Dub. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Brian Wilkers, he owns a motorsports that built my FD car.
And he's got a Cassis red 911?
Yeah, it's a turbo, right?
Really?
It's a wide body. It's a wide body non-turbo.
Cassis is a fucking dope color, isn't it?
Beautiful color.
His drift cars that color too.
Did he really? That rules. That color, like I have a good family friend who owns a Porsche dealership and has for like 50 years owned this dealership, and when he came out and saw that car, he was like, is that Cassis? I was like, yeah. He goes, couldn't fucking sell those things for nothing in 87. He goes, I had a 928 demo car in Cassis for a year and a half because we couldn't sell it. Now they're worth money.
Yeah, it's funny how that happens.
Yeah, I know, right? 25. You need 25 years. Once you get 25 years for it to cycle through, you're good to go. Yeah. Will Baxter is considering a career change to the motorsports industry from a boring office job. What advice or guidance do you have for someone looking to potentially make that change? Any roles that a consulting and sales skill set might come in handy?
Oh, yeah. Brandon, you want to take this one?
That's a Brandon question. I like this question.
So we can get a little backstory on Brandon, too. So, just real quick. He used to work in the tech world. His background's with Facebook and things like that. And so coming from tech and basically trying to apply what he learned there on how these like startup companies would operate and bring it into motorsports and how we now take content as like our highest level of return for our partners, not just results on the track. And so, take her away.
So I joined the team about 2 years ago. But before then, in a past career life, 6 years at Facebook on the global marketing solutions team, basically working with like brands like Subway, Starbucks, figuring out how to provide solutions for them in social media and Facebook specifically. I've had stints at Apple before then, other sort of tech startups in New York. But I've always had a love and passion for motorsports, and I've known Chris for almost 20 years now. So being able to take all of that, the insight and knowledge and how to come up with campaigns and programs for partners, but applying to something I'm truly passionate about, which is motorsports. We've been able to obviously grow the team. Our partners are super happy. We've become basically a top to bottom full marketing solution for our partners. The racing is production costs, part of the campaign costs, but really
it's we're an automotive marketing company, you know. So yeah, so absolutely, if you're looking to make a transition to that, you know, something maybe like a brand manager, or obviously you have to, you know, find something to get in, but like something like that, bringing those skills into motorsports, I think
that's absolutely really well. Beneficial. And it's like the one thing
start that with a motorsport you're actually passionate about would be probably a good place too.
So yeah, like a B2B consulting, that's exactly what we're doing, and that's what most. That's what like the top level teams will have, you know. Of course, like Papadakis and Vaughn and all those guys, like they're doing, you know, the same thing we're doing. There's a lot of the teams in like the mid range, like that's like what they're missing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no offense to them, it's just they're just making their way there, right? And so it's just about being able to provide more to your partners and not just focusing too much on I just have to like build race car, drive race car, and like go home. It's like there's so much more that happens outside of that, and so like. Motorsports is like a perfect position for that because, you know, cars have had stickers on the side of them since the beginning of time.
Yeah, I mean, the sticker on the car is like the last of it at this
point. That's what I'm
saying.
Like, that's the most archaic
version of
it.
What kind
of
value and visibility can you give to the companies that are paying your way
exactly.
to go
racing? There's more outlets for it now than ever.
Yeah.
But also, you've got to like, so Chris is the blueprint for this, right? You know, you obviously have an accomplished driver with championships behind his belt, you know, an accomplished award-winning car builder, but then also a personality that can get on a show and host a show. And I've been asking around, looking in our space, there's not anyone else I can really think of that has all three. It's usually a driver host or a builder host or something. They have the two, but not all three. So Chris is the blueprint that we're trying to, with Alex, same thing. Again, you know, I know he's got that championship talent, you know. He can build a car. He's great. He's hosted shows before, things like that. Again, that's the blueprint. And then same thing with Brian, you know, great. You know, he's been wrenching. He's been doing some content and stuff for us. You know, Chris is the blueprint for this to make it successful. So yeah, you know, I love what I do, but, you know, you guys make it easy for me to get on the phone, you know.
That's a good answer. And I think, like, you know, how to make that first jump, that's for this the person to figure out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what team you're going to call, who.
Foot in the door is the hardest part.
But if you have that skill set of B2B sales and you know something about racing and racing drivers, that certainly helps.
Well, yeah, and you're bringing something to the program. So you got to find the driver that looks like he needs that kind of support, and you give him an offer they can't refuse, you know. And like that's how management's been working since the beginning of time is, you know, it's a percentage deal. It's like, hey, if I bring you this and I get this percentage and you grow the relationship and it goes from there. You know, Brandon, he's like, you know, new to this. I worked with a couple other companies over the years. So it wasn't too much of like a sale. It was like I needed the help and he was like wanting to transition. So we're like, let's go for it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming down, guys.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, really appreciate
it.
It
was a good time having you here. I guess this solution works. We just need to go buy another chair.
Glad we got to use all
Brandon's
of
not
outputs.
Actually that short.
Yeah. You have to use all the XLR inputs on the mixing board.
Yeah.
And are you guys all going to be at SEMA as well? You're going to be out there?
I'll definitely be there.
You guys going to be out there?
Brian will be there.
I'll be there. Unfortunately, I still have to very much work a normal job. I still work for Snap-on, and I spend most of my time in a Snap-on truck.
Oh, really?
So for now, I have to spend a lot of time doing that, and they're accepting enough of my racing, but we've been asking a lot of them far.
So in Vegas for a week.
They don't have a booth. There's no booth. There's no Snap-on booth. You should be a brand representative out there, man. That's what's up.
I know, right?
Well, we'll be out there, so we'll see you guys in the Valvoline booth for sure.
We'll be
setting up our portable rig out there behind 8-foot Lexan fucking barriers, fucking hazmat suits and gas masks on.
I know. We're going to have the Ultimaniac in the Nissan booth.
Oh, cool. All right. Yeah, so go check that thing out. Mm-hmm. And
Brian's competing in the Grid Life Game Night Sim Challenge.
Oh, we'll be there for that too.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, nice. We'll be at the Grid Life Game. Is that, can the public go to that?
I think you have to RSVP, but I believe so.
Yeah. Okay,
I think it's free.
You can go to Grid Life's website and do that. Well, that's Thursday night in Vegas.
Yeah. So. I look forward to losing to Brian.
Yes. Brian will be murdering. Forsberg, Alex, Brian, Brandon, thank you very much for joining us today. That's our show. And we're actually here tomorrow. My father, Roger Farah, is taking your business questions tomorrow.
Wow.
My dad's a heavy hitter in the old school business retailing industry and one of our more popular guests of this past year. So he'll be answering people's business questions tomorrow. So get in the Patreon if you're about that. And And have a good race this weekend, guys.
Thanks, man.
Enjoy it.
Appreciate it.
I'll be up in the skybox away from the fucking tire smoke. All right.
That's
our show. And have a good rest of your day, everybody. Bye.